For May the 1st, 2020, we talk about Kirby Star Allies, A Short Hike, and Onimusha Warlords Remastered. Before we get started, I should say there was a minor problem with the recording program, and you will notice that at times, both David and Jala's voice is going to dip down kind of lower. Don't worry, nobody has gone through like ultra puberty or whatever. I just couldn't fix that this time. We'll try and avoid it in the future if I can see it. Anyway, apologies. Welcome to Level 327. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm David Maysmith.
I'm Jala Prentice.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. I need you to help me solve a mystery.
Ooh, I like mysteries.
Okay. It's very low stakes is the thing.
I like steaks.
I mean, yeah, it's hard not to. They're good. But yesterday, I saw that I had some free time. I was all caught up on homework and stuff like that. And all right, yeah, I'm going to sit down and watch a movie. And unbidden, I thought, you know what? It's been forever since I watched Alien. Okay.
Hey.
And so I sat down and I looked, and Alien is streaming on HBO Go. And so, I got that. I'm going to watch Alien. I watched Alien. It's a good movie. It's still good, in case anybody's wondering. And then I think I tweeted about it, and then I go about my business, and then, you know, et cetera, et cetera, today. And I look and I see that April the 26th, the day in question where I watched the movie Alien, it is Alien Day.
Oh, it was in the zeitgeist, eh?
I guess like I have no reason to believe anything influenced me to watch the movie Alien on Alien Day. But it's unsettling to me that I did that.
So is this Alien Day as in just aliens in general, or specifically Alien the series? You know, specifically Xenomorph.
That IP.
I'm not sure. I only learned that it was Alien Day because I saw a headline on a video game news website that Alien Isolation was on deep discount because of Alien Day. So
also I think the Pentagon just released their UFO footage today.
Sure, their quote unquote UFO quote unquote footage.
So
you think
I
they're
think,
gonna tell you? You think they're
was
gonna...
it just an empty file folder?
No, so it's interesting because apparently the most interesting theory I've heard for why they're doing this is that they basically realized that no one will, you know, like no pilot or whatever will report a UFO sighting for fear of sounding like a crazy person.
Yeah.
However, with our enemies now having drones, they want pilots to be reporting UFO sightings.
Oh, so they soften the ground.
It's part of an effort to normalize it.
Mm-hmm. Huh. No idea. So I just wanted to put that to the room, see if there were any easy answers. I've got no idea why. I feel like I was duped by marketing without realizing it. I already paid for the service. Go ahead, Jala.
Yeah. Either that or you are just part of the collective unconscious now.
Maybe. Man, that sucks. I labored long and hard to stay out of that, but.
I'm just curious what April 26 has to do with the movie Alien.
I have no idea. Maybe it was the original release date for the movie.
Yeah.
Maybe it has nothing to do with the movie.
Maybe.
Maybe it's just aliens in general. Yeah.
Someone just put a stake in the ground. Today's the day. Yeah.
If not today, then when?
Release date was May 25th. Sad.
Oh. So, that's my story. Everything else is predictable. What's been going on? I've been playing with my cat and missing my family. How about you guys? Hey, well, Jolly, you've been away.
I've been away. I sent some links of stuff into Instagram, so you can go look at them. There's some, those are photo dumps. There's lots of photos if you go click and follow. For anybody listening, my Instagram and my Twitter have all the photos of everything ever. I did a quarantine ruck star course for Go Ruck, which basically is they have some suggestions of routes that you can do on your own time. You know, like by yourself or with people at a social distancing distance, whatever works for you. And basically you sign up for it and you order the patch and you do it on your own. And there is no like mass organization to it. You can also submit for doing your own. And one of the guys in my rucking club, submitted one for the La Porte area, which is like where the Port of Houston is. And so we went on a ruck and we were rucking around in this little place, La Porte, and next to the water and, you know, whatever. I took lots of photos. It rained a little bit, but, you know, everybody was wearing their masks. Everybody kept at a social distance and we were just, you know, out there rucking and getting some air, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it was great because I was like, okay, I've wanted to go running, but I live in a very, you know, highly populated urban area. So it's like, you know, there's not a way for me to run and still breathe because of, you know, the mask. It's hard to breathe and wear a mask at the same time. And there's not enough room on the running trails or, you know, any of that stuff. My neighborhood doesn't have, you know, sidewalks on all of the streets. So, you know, I'd be on the road and then that's like also not safe, especially at the times that I am available to go run. So it's like, I guess I'm just not going to be doing that. So I've been doing like indoor cardio, but like, I just need to get outside, you know, cause I used to train almost exclusively outside. So it's been driving me nuts, not being, you know, outdoors, but, you know, it's been raining a lot here too. If anybody's wondering, well, why don't you just go in your backyard, Jala? Well, because it's been raining.
Yeah.
So, but like in this particular case, I just took my rain jacket and went out and did that stuff. So, and just got some ruck miles in. We went at like 5 o'clock in the morning. So we got to see the sunrise. And of course there's nobody out there at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the best time to go, but it was a lot of fun. I'm going to be doing the other, mileage. There is also a shorter version. This was the 12 mile ruck. There's also a shorter one that is 5k to 15k you pick. And I made up a course that is in an area close to me. And I'm going to be going and doing that with one other guy probably this coming weekend. So the patch for that one looks cooler because it looks like the biohazard symbol. And so like, you know, biohazard and things, you know,
I had to get that one.
So I had to go get that one. The patch for the one that I did is like a plague doctor, so you know it looks pretty cool too. But you know, anyway, so here I'll send you guys what the other patch looks like. There you go. It's pretty cool.
So point of order, the movie Aliens takes place on the moon designated LV-426.
Oh,
so
okay.
April 26th is 426.
Yeah, LV-426 is also the planet they land on and pick up the egg.
Mm.
It's the same planet. Yeah. As good a reason as any.
Yeah. And by the way, today is Kirby's birthday. It was the anniversary of the release date of the very first Kirby game.
Oh, okay.
Today, Kirby's Dream Land.
Nice.
That comes of importance later.
This implies that Kirby, you know, has a soul rather than being a, you know, evil cannibal creature.
Yes.
Kirby is like the ultimate horror game.
Yes. Also the ultimate horror game.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, it's good that you're still able to do those events, even without, you know, it being the usual way.
I was signed up for the Cinco de Mayo events, and obviously those weren't going to happen. So I just used the credit towards buying the patches for this and like the T-shirt for the quarantine ruck, like the biohazard looking one, because that shirt looks cool.
Yeah.
So,
Hmm. Very good. Ben, how about you?
You sound so riveted. Okay. Yawning in the middle of your sentence.
I didn't mean to be yawning. I thought I was off microphone.
Oh. No, you weren't. I heard you.
You can't hide your yawns from us, Cole.
I'm sorry. I apologize, Jella. Ben, how are you? You weren't here last time.
That's true. I wasn't. Yeah. I was working last week, so I was being lame. But this week I don't have to work like that, so I'll continue to be lame, but I won't be working and being lame.
Yeah, lame for a different reason.
Exactly. But yeah, I have games to talk about. I don't know. I played them. I'm running thin on games, which I'm starting to worry about now. So I need to gather up some recommendations so I don't fill up with cabin fever instead.
No. So, yeah, you want to avoid that.
Yeah, it's starting to get like sunny in Seattle and nice. Mm. And so it's both a good and a bad thing. It's nice to like see a sunny day outside, but then on the other hand, it's like, man, I want to go outside.
Yeah.
It's 90 degrees over here, by the way.
Mm. Yeah, that's too much. Yeah, we're 90 degrees. Why would it ever be 90 degrees?
That's like whenever people are talking about, oh, it's 22 degrees. What the hell? It's 90 degrees over here. I'm in shorts and a tank top. No. And it's like, my shirt doesn't survive my entire workout because it's too hot even in my office.
Why in the world would anybody let it be 90 degrees?
Sorry, Ben, continue. You want to go
don't
outside?
Don't read current events, Cole. There's bad news for you around.
Yeah,
there.
Right.
Oh man,
that's all I got.
Cool.
Okay.
David, how about you?
Not a whole lot. Just been doing the same old. Lots of martial arts and work.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it.
Not bad. Okay. Well, I think that's some banter. Yep, and Greta agrees. Hey, girl, that was a very loud purr. I don't know if it came through. So we've got
that didn't come through, but your yawn sure did.
Yeah, well, I'm right on top of my microphone too. Yes.
I'm giving you shit. Okay. So go ahead with the procedure.
Yeah, no. Okay. I think we've got the usual.
You need to get a yawn filter on your mic, Cole.
I've already got a pop filter. Oh, so many filters. Anyway, I think we've got the usual kind of show in us tonight. We've got the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, I believe you've been away the longest, so I will throw it to you first.
Okay, I got some stuff to talk about. I finished both Nine Parchments and Trine 3, so I want to kind of put a cap on both of those and then move on to another game after that. So, Nine Parchments. Dave and I picked up the latter half of this game and knocked off the difficulty down to the lowest level because as I was saying the last time I was on, that game is like a nice normal ramp up of difficulty, and then all of a sudden about halfway it's like bam, and it's like, oh, whoa, this suddenly got a lot harder, huh? And now I kind of need to have more people than just the one guy. So we opened up the game to be public and we're joined by different pairs of players. And actually, believe it or not, all of them were really high level and helped us get through some really tough parts.
Oh, wow.
One pair of folks went out of their way to help us unlock extra characters that they actually already had because they had like fucking everything and they had beaten the game on like the most difficult mode because they had the skins for it and stuff.
Useful
and
pubbies.
So, yeah, and like there's no voice chat in any Switch game. It's all like separate via, you know, like a separate app on your phone or something, which
weird.
Why even do that? If you're using your phone, just use Discord or something. Mm-hmm. So these folks weren't chit-chatting with us, but they did use the in-game compliments and greetings and say hi and good job and stuff like that.
Hmm.
And we were only able to get as far as we did and finish the game and unlock some of these extra, you know, characters and stuff that these people were leading us to only because of these pubbies. So it was actually really surprising. I've not been around pubbies very much. I usually don't play it with public servers or anything like that. Generally speaking, the most exposure I've ever had is like in an MMO where that's what it is all public, you know. But I was surprised because it was actually a lot of fun, and these people were like really good teammates, and it was like, you know, bunches of different pairs of people helping us out, and over the span of two or three sessions that we played, and like the last session we just kind of powered through. We were only going to play for a little bit, but then those people that were helping us were so good, it was like, okay, no, we're just gonna like keep rolling with these guys, you know, because mm-hmm. like they're helping us out so much, like I don't want to leave. So yeah, and I think it's gonna be easier the next time that we play it, as we unlock stronger characters and better magics. But we won't be playing it again for a while, because we kind of need a break from how hectic that is, because
yeah,
that is a pretty hectic play style, you know, like the Magicka beat 'em up, everything's blowing up on the screen kind of mess.
Yeah.
So any questions about Nine Parchments?
No, I just think it's great that you managed to find like constructive pubbies.
I was surprised. I was like, oh God, this is going to be terrible. But no, it wasn't. It was actually really good.
How long has this game been out?
I talked about it last time in October 2018. So it probably came out in 2018 or maybe 2017.
I think that it might make sense, so all of the experienced people. So like people who are still with it are probably invested in it being a good experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the next thing I finished was Trine 3, and guys, I figured out why people are mixed about this game.
Okay.
So it is really okay. I said it before when I had just done research about the game that it is very short compared to the other games, but also it ends on a cliffhanger.
What?
Like it just ends. Like I'll talk about that in more detail in a minute. But I checked into it, and Frozenbyte said that they planned a much longer game, but Trine 3 cost three times the amount that Trine 2 did, and they ran out of resources and didn't realize that they would until it was too late. So they had actually planned a lot longer of a game and just ran out of money and had to wrap it up.
Huh.
So
that's so,
gotta do that agile.
That's lame.
Yeah. Yeah. And so narratively, what happens in this game, because last time I was talking about the controls and stuff, and I didn't actually talk about what the story of the game is or anything. So narratively, there's trouble at the Astral Academy, which is also where Nine Parchments starts, because that's in the same world as Trine. And the three heroes are summoned by the Trine and go fight as they always do. But then one or another one of them decides that it'd be a really good thing to be free of their tie to the Trine, because they keep getting yanked out of whatever they're up to and then shoved off on some adventure. Mm. And they're like, well, it's great that we can't die and all, but also I just kind of want to live my life, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it might have been Amadeus, because he was on the vacation at a beach with his family, and that got interrupted to go fight evil, and he's like, I was on vacation, you know. Like,
Amadeus is the mage,
the wizard. Yeah, the wizard guy.
That dweeb has a family.
Yeah, he has a like in the DLC of Trine 2, the whole point is the goblins steal his wife Margaret, and you have to go save her, because if he doesn't, then she will get free somehow on her own eventually and come get him. And so, like, you know, like you never see her. It's just comic, because you just see like her foot sticking out of the bag, and everything. But like, and he's got kids, and his kids, like, Amadeus has been trying to master the fireball spell since forever, and the only thing he can do is make boxes and planks. But his kids all know how to do the fireball spell, and that's part of the ongoing joke about him, is like his kids are better at magic than he is. You know,
he's just specialized.
You can make a box, set it on fire, and then throw it at people.
This is true. So, yeah, but like also Amadeus is one of the unlockable characters in Nine Parchments, and that was one of the super special characters that those two guys helped us, or two people, I don't know what they were. You know, those two people ended up helping us unlock. And so now I've got Amadeus in that game, and I kind of want to see if it's like boxes, planks, boxes, more boxes, many, you know, smaller boxes. Like what do they do with his skills to make him actually work in that game, is what I'm kind of curious about. But anyway, so Amadeus talks to the other, you know, like the other two, the thief and the night guy, and basically talks them into willing themselves to be free of the trine, and this ends up breaking it. And then suddenly a purple cloud of evil bad man pours out, and then the thousand year sleep of the evil bad man is over, and he's going to get the other artifacts of power to release the rest of the pieces of himself. Because, of course, three heroes sealed him away into three artifacts a long time ago, and it's the souls of those heroes who are sealing it all away. Like the Trine, for example, is Trine is the name of one of the heroes who fought the evil wizard alongside her sister many, many years ago. And her sister died, but Trine was able to bind her soul to the artifact and keep the wizard's power in check. And so you just broke her soul into a bunch of pieces. And, you know, now the evil's out. And so, like, the game, you know, like, tells you all this narrative stuff. And you start looking for all the pieces of the Trine, like, oh, shit, we got to get this Trine back together again, guys, so we can go off and go, like, get the other artifacts and keep this guy from fully awakening. And the game ends when Pontius, Zoya, and Amadeus have gotten two pieces of the Trine. They haven't even finished fixing it. Wow. And they haven't even started looking for the other ones. And that's, like, boop, the end of it. So
that's really
that would
bad.
Be a reason to get mad. Yeah, that would be a reason to get mad at the game. So yeah. I can understand now being upset at it. So the other artifacts are the mind and body, you know, artifacts of mind and body, and then the artifact of soul is the Trine. And hopefully Trine 4 finishes up the story. I don't know because I haven't played it, but Trine 4 just came out last fall, and I have it, and Dave and I are going to play it. Of course, because we've been going through all of those games. The Trine 4 game goes back to the Trine 2 style, probably because of the cost issues.
One would imagine.
Yeah.
Generally, you don't touch the stove twice.
Yeah. So Trine 4 has really high reviews. So I'm anticipating that it's going to fix some of the problems that folks have with 3. So I don't know if it will. I would assume it would continue the story, but I guess I'll know when I get there. So... yeah, like Trine 3 is fine, but it's a lot shorter than you even think it's going to be because, like, it's going, it's ramping up. You're like, okay, cool. Next day, no, that's the end of the game. Why are there credits? So,
I mean, so what does that do to the difficulty curve? Like, did they?
It doesn't really have a. It doesn't have one of those things that games have. It doesn't have the time to ramp up to anything because it's so short. So it's like, you know, and they weren't planning for it to be as short as it was. So
yeah,
like it's definitely part of a game. It's like half of a Trine game. So anyway, any questions about Trine 3 before I progress and talk about a new thing?
Is the half of the game worth playing?
Yeah, it's fun. It's got like cosmetic glitches that are funny.
Yeah.
And it plays well. Like I was talking about it the last time I was on, more details about how it differs from the earlier Trine games. It simplifies a lot of stuff because they were trying to solve the question of how to make these powers work in 3D. And make them work in a more action style game because this one is a little bit more action style than the prior Trine games. Overall, like it's still a very fun game to play. It's still enjoyable. And the quality of the part of the game that came out is good. It just stops. So, you know, as long as you understand that if you play Trine 3, you probably need to also buy Trine 4 so you can see the rest of what goes on, then, you know. I guess that's fine. So anyway. So okay, moving on. I'll talk about one more game. I also have been playing I mentioned that I was playing stuff on Switch, trying to co-op a little bit with Dave, and that there weren't many things to co-op, but what ended up happening is he was playing Kirby's Adventure on NES and I was just watching him via the little, you know, screen share thing that you can do. You can also pass off the controller and I could, you know, pick it up and play part of Kirby if I wanted to, but I was just very content to watch him play. So, you know, anyway, so that spawned me being very excited about Kirby because Kirby, I guess, I just somehow missed it when it first was around on the NES and everything, and I didn't have a Game Boy when it was like the original Game Boy. Mm-hmm. I only had later ones, but by then I was playing other IPs, so I just never got into Kirby.
Kirby's a really strange franchise because of that. It's usually like a late addition to a Nintendo system, and it's never really advertised that much.
But, dude, Kirby is awesome.
He's great.
I love Kirby. He is like so much fun. So I got so excited about it that we started trying out a couple of games on Switch. So there's Kirby... Kirby Clash or something like that. And that one is just like a free to play thing that, you know, like I knew it was going to be basically crap. And so like, you know, it's still kind of fun because it's Kirby, but basically it's just like a boss rush and like, you know, farming for items and crap. So it's like not exciting. The other thing that I've been playing though, I played the demo for Kirby Star Allies and I loved it so much that I had to buy the game. And I don't even buy like, you know, first person title games very often.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh,
you're not using your Switch to buy like Nintendo games.
I don't normally. I usually get, you know, I'm very much an indie person.
Yeah, yeah. And the Switch is a great system for indies. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, but like the opening of this game is so great. And, you know, the premise of Kirby Star Allies. Aliens come to Dreamland, and they see there's those aliens again, Cole, and they drop a bunch of dark hearts onto the world that possess different creatures and make them fight you. And when you beat the bosses, the dark heart pops out and then disappears. And basically there's three generals of the alien army who want to spread the darkness and take over. And I don't know, like it's a Kirby game. You don't really need much of a premise. You just go be a pink blob eating everybody.
Right.
So,
which has not stopped them from putting in way too much lore, but continue.
Yeah, I know, but
so with these dark hearts, that means the people you're cannibalizing are mostly innocent?
Possibly. So here's the thing. I've completed about a third of the game now, and I'm somewhere in a starfield right at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
The fun thing about this game, the reason why this is even cooler than like a regular Kirby game, is that one person plays Kirby and up to three people can play the friends the Kirby makes out of the enemies that he encounters.
The friends that he decides not to devour.
Oh, but guess what? You can eat them.
Okay.
And absorb their powers even if they're your friends.
Hey, I need to borrow your body.
He is... yeah, you can absolutely eat your friends. And I was just like, I was so like happy and horrified at the same time. And that's kind of my reaction to Kirby overall. So anyway, but unfortunately it's local co-op only. So it kills me because I'm like, I want to play this with Dave. I want other people to play my little friends and all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. But basically you throw a heart at them and then they become your friend and then they give you a high five and then they're on your team. And mm-hmm. That's how that works. So there's lots and lots of interactivity, which is what makes this really cool. So you can unlock certain mechanisms only with a certain number of party members. And I'm about to like send about 10 tweet links to you so you can scroll through those as you please. Anyway, you can combine with your other friends and make a friend bridge or a friend circle, which turns you into a rolling boulder, crushing everything in your path.
I know what a friend boulder is.
You can also become a friend star, which is like a little airplane that you shoot stuff out of. Okay. And depending on who's on the front, you can change which character is driving.
Okay.
The attacks are different depending upon their like if the fire guy, you know, shoots fireballs and stuff, you know, that kind of thing. You can also turn into a friend train. Oh my God, that is my absolute favorite one because Kirby has a little conductor hat and the friend train makes the little train noises and it can go upside down and everything and just like chugga everywhere. It's so cool. You can like pick up your friend and throw them and like crush walls with them by just throwing them into stuff because Kirby gives no fucks.
Mm-hmm.
friend Supervac. Like, if you've got the cleaning superpower that you get from the cleaning broom enemy guy, you can suck them all up into the vacuum cleaner and shoot them out.
Okay.
Also make them dance. I don't know. There's all different kinds of crap. It's some of this stuff only pops up, like, has only popped up once in any of the levels that I've come across. And I'm like, suddenly you turn into a band and then you do like this, like, you know, attack where you're just like, screaming, and like Kirby has a green mohawk. I don't even know. There's like a, it's in those links that I, it's somewhere in there, but like, it is so fun. You can power up each other's weapons. Like, if Kirby has a sword and signals to the fire guy, Burning Leo can then add flame to the sword, and then you've got a fire sword that has different attributes and works differently and, you know, attacks enemies in a different way. When I had mage powers, I used telekinesis on a stone friend who became a statue, and then I smashed enemies with it. And then when I was in stone form, I was powered up by an ice friend and suddenly slid around everywhere as ice curling. And like, I was like,
I think you mean.
Yes, ice curbling. So, yeah, definitely a thing. There are just so many combinations that you can make of the different weapons and friends and interactions that it's immensely fun to play, and it's really satisfying as well. You can also unlock different enemies of his that are like big, big enemies, like, you know, King Dedede. You know, you can you can bring him out, or some of the other enemies and friends from prior games, you know, in Dreamland Castle, which you can go to every time you finish a level. You can go to the castle and then like add another special friend instead of just the people in the level. So you can also pick up food, and if your health is full, you can kiss. You just turn around and just kiss one of your friends, and they will be healed as if they picked up.
Yeah, that's you baby birding the food into them. And that's happened since I think Kirby Superstar.
So I'm like, wow, you just totally, okay, all right.
They have my favorite transformation or whatever from previous games, was I forget what you had to do, but you just it was simply Kirby with a piece of sandpaper, and you tap the button to have him sandpaper on his head until he builds up friction and bursts into flame and runs around screaming on fire, doing damage to enemies.
What? I don't know what you're talking about. But one thing that makes me laugh is the sleeping enemy that, like, if you absorb it and you use the power, all you do is lay down and sleep. You don't even gain any life back. You just sleep.
Yeah, it's just it's a dud for you to absorb. You know, you got to watch out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, the levels are just really, really fun because they're always introducing new combinations of powers required in order to go through. And even when the powers are used again, it's a lot of fun because you're like, oh yes, the friend train has come back, guys. So yeah. And also there's Evil Mask from Mario.
Oh yeah. Fanto.
They're in there. Yeah.
I've got Fanto on my wall. Anyway. It's immersion therapy.
I know that.
It's the only way I could not be scared of Fanto is to have him around me at all times.
Well, that's particularly the reason why I was like, I need to show the video of this, because Cole has Fanto.
Yep.
So
yeah,
but anyway, Kirby is so much fun. Oh my god. And like, Dennis needs to buy this game and play it with his kids, because like, that would be, he would have so much fun with this. I think
this looks like a totally opposite version of Darkest Dungeon.
Is everybody marching in a row like that? Nice. Yeah.
So anyway, like, I'm very excited about Kirby. He is terrifying. He can eat his friends cruelly or feed them. He also cooks them. There's like, you can get a cooking power and put them all into a pot and make them into a stew.
I mean, you would want your friends to be delicious. And
I want to be friends with Kirby.
I know. Kirby is... Yeah. Oh,
geez. Yeah, no. So, like, I mean, you're having fun playing this by yourself. I mean, like, how do the AI characters work? Do they just kind of follow around with you? Can you switch between them at will? Like, what, how does that shake out?
You can't, Yeah, you can't switch between them. They are all AI controlled. You can kind of trigger them. Like, there's commands that you can do to make your characters, like, say, for example, if you push up that while you're just standing there, that will cause Kirby to try to tell one of them to, you know, put one of their powers on his weapon if he's got one. Or it also, at the same time, will command other characters in the party to do the same thing, so that way everybody gets powered up, for example. And the only time you can switch which, you know, which character is controlling is when you're on the friend star.
Okay.
And you can figure, you know, you can pick which character is in the front of that. But yeah, the AI little dudes, they will go and automatically attack anything within a certain range. So if you want to absorb it, the only problem is you have to, you know, like if they kill the guy that you're trying to absorb, you just have to move off the screen for a second and come back and absorb them really quick before, you know, your party kills them again or whatever. Which, you know, since everything respawns in Kirby, it's like not a big deal.
Right.
So, you know,
nuts.
It works out pretty well. And like, boy, some of those characters that you can get in the Dreamland Castle are so OP. I'm just like, wow, overkill much? Some of these attacks, it's like one of them pulls out, I think it's Magalon or something like that, pulls out this gigantic sword and just like, you know, just hacks at half the screen with this huge sword. And oh, I see that fridge that you just put there, David. When he's in the painter mode, he can paint a fridge and then it makes like food appear.
So if you follow the link, I copied it like at the time where it shows the transformation I was talking about.
Okay. I've got to see this.
Yeah.
What in the world is that? Oh my god. Okay, that's really great. I'm going to have to tweet that out now because reasons. Okay, so listeners can go to my Twitter and see the link of Kirby rubbing sandpaper or whatever on his head and catching on fire and running around. Anyway, so that's all I got about Kirby. I did play other stuff, but I've been talking a while, so.
Nice.
Next time.
Yeah. Nope, you're doing a good job of selling Kirby. I like, since you've been tweeting about it, and since you, like, they maybe talked about it last time, I tweeted about this. Like, Kirby has to be like one of the best character designs to be in like 2D or 3D art. Like, I prefer 2D Kirby. I think that the thick outline has to work really well. But like, I was even just like browsing like official Kirby merch and I'm like, yeah, this is just like a super attractive character design.
Yeah. And like the games are fun and it's just like, I like the fact, like, one of the listeners, John, had sent me a link to like a video that's just like, how does Kirby have all of this power, but all he does is he can't even talk except for like two words, and all he does is eat and sleep, and he has no ambitions, and he doesn't even vocalize, and, you know, he has no scruples because he will eat anything, you know, or anybody, and, you know, all this other stuff.
No, he's basically Azathoth.
Yeah.
So. I was thinking he's a friendly version of The Thing.
Right. Oh my gosh, the Thing game where Kirby is the enemy.
That's awesome.
Nice. So Kirby Star Allies, I think is the one that you have.
Yes, yes. Kirby Star Allies.
Kirby Star Allies and 9 Parchments and Trine 3. Good set.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ben, I will move on to you now.
I also have a set of 3. In chronological order, a week or two ago, I beat Death Stranding finally.
Okay.
I think the last time I talked about it, I wasn't sure if I was like halfway through or not. I wasn't. So, yeah, I don't know what to say about the game outside of like some of the characters are really good. I watched a review of Video Game Donkey or what he had to say about it afterwards. Mm-hmm. And I think he hit the nail on the head of, it's a game where there's a bunch of exposition at the front. There's 40 hours of mechanics of like traversing environments, and there's a bunch of exposition at the back end. And those three things are very sparsely related. I think to finish the game, I think it took me 3 sittings to get through the cutscenes. So it's very similar to like Metal Gear Solid. Yeah.
Wow.
Part of it was like, you know, okay, I need to stop right now. I have something to do. But then part of it was just like, man, it's still going.
Yeah.
I don't think there is that many payoffs that were like worthwhile story-wise. Like I wasn't, the characters are really good for like 5-minute scenes, you know, and it's like, oh, this is really interesting. There's like a cool environment around them. Like that's fine. But like they're not like strong enough where you haven't really like lived with them for like the 40 hours that you spent playing the games. You're not really invested in like whatever they're trying to do. And so like the payoffs at the end, like don't really land. Like the entire point of the game is you're traversing the country to see your sister. But like you hardly, I think purposely there's not that much like character development between you and like your sister. It doesn't give you a lot of like backstory behind it. You know, like the game is like very intentionally vague about a lot of details to try and have them be like almost like surprises later on in the game. But it just doesn't really coalesce well, I don't think. I don't know. So, yeah. I mean, I still think the traversal part of the game is very unique and very interesting. And like, don't get me wrong, if Kojima comes out with another game, I'm going to buy it and play it.
Yeah.
It's just that this one, I don't know. It's weird that it's like very prescient now when you like see it. I don't think it was like intentionally that way, but the similarities between the game and like the coronavirus infected Earth is like oddly similar, you know, but it's almost by like accident, you know?
Yeah. It wouldn't be the first time that he was prescient about stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's a weird mess of a game. If you have a lot of time to burn on your hands, it's not a complete waste of time.
Yeah. Whoa.
I know, right?
Try not to make that phrase any more faint. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you said you thought, you know, last time you thought that you were halfway through and then you weren't. Were you less than halfway through or were you like toward the end? Like
I was towards the end. Yeah. There wasn't too much left. There is like room to like, if you were really passionate about the game, there is room to like explore more.
Mm-hmm.
I went back and found there's a cameo by Conan O'Brien in the game. So I went back and found that, which is fun. And if you like Conan, it's very fun. And there's a lot of cameos apparently like that, hidden throughout the game of other, it's more like world celebrity type, people. Cause I think there's a few from like Japanese video game industry. So I mean, there's like more there, I guess, if you want. The traversal payoff wasn't really there. Like I finished and built all the roads that I wanted to build. I was a little bit disappointed. There wasn't like, or at least I didn't see it. There wasn't like an unlock for like a mecha truck, trailer truck that could transport a whole bunch of things.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not really sure how I was supposed to accomplish those types of missions that like require like ultra high weight. So I don't know. It's definitely a very mixed experience.
No.
I don't want to outright say that the game is bad because I think the game is very creative and I think there's a lot of very unique things in the game.
Yeah. You spent a lot of time with it too.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. At the very least, it's a very interesting experience. I don't know if I have much more to say outside of that.
Is there any sort of end game or anything like that, or is it pretty much do its thing and then get out?
There's like a final, we'll say like, I don't even want to call it an act because it's not as long as like other portions of the game, but there's like a final like maybe 2 to 3 hours of gameplay and then a final 2 to 3 hours of cutscenes and kind of mixed between.
I guess what I mean is, for example, Metal Gear Solid 5 very obviously had at the end like, hey, the game's basically over, but you can get into the kind of pseudo PvP and, you know, build out your tech tree and, you know, that sort of thing. Like there's very explicitly a thing for after the game if you wanted to play for 100 hours.
The way they handle that is after the final ending of the game, there's something that says like 2 weeks earlier, and then you can just explore the world however you want. So that's how they handle that issue, I guess.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Death Stranding. Weird game. Next game. This is a short game. I played A Short Hike.
Oh, which, okay.
Yeah, I don't know if we've talked about this on the podcast yet or not.
I don't believe we have.
I cannot stand that animation style. Like, it gives me migraines.
Oh, yeah. So, for reference, if people haven't heard about this game, it is a, I guess, indie darling type game. What kind of hooked me about it, because I guess I'm follow the masses, is it got overwhelmingly positive reviews on Steam.
Yep.
But the premise of the game is that you are a bird and you want to climb to the top of a mountain. And you explore this bird world that's supposed to be very charming, and it is.
I was going to say. Yeah. They say it's charming, but it's shit.
I'm not trying to dump on everything this week. Yeah. But it's very, like, low-poly type aesthetic. Like, it's made in Unity, so it looks like they ran it through some sort of filter. It has this, like, weird thing, too, where with distance, it's a very highly controlled camera. So, like, mm-hmm. you can't control the camera at all. It follows you in very specific angles. And I think they do that maybe for memory reasons, maybe. Because mm-hmm. there's certain points where at certain angles where you see that they unload the asset in frame, like in the corner. Right. And it's like, oh. So I think that's more like parts of the game where you're maybe not supposed to go. So there's a little bit of leeway for that. But there's this weird thing where if you're at a perspective where you can see really far in the distance, they do this weird thing where they, like, sepia out the background. Or, like, things very far away are kind of, like, browned out, and it's just mm-hmm. line drawings. Anyway, the gameplay of the game is you just kind of, like, explore the world. You talk to different characters. It's kind of like Chore Simulator, where it's, like, one character might be like, hey, find me 15 shells. Or one's like, hey, can you climb this, like, rock course? And the other one's like, hey, let's play volleyball or something like that. There's, like, yeah. things like this. And the rewards for each of these types of things is you get what's called, like, a golden feather. And that just increases your stamina. So now that I'm thinking about it, it's kind of similar gameplay as Shadow of the Colossus, where it's that's what you're playing for, right? Is that you can climb for longer for
right.
doing whatever these objectives are. And that's kind of the premise of the game. It is a very short game. I think I played it in maybe like 2 or 3 hours. So it's not like a huge game or anything. It's a fine experience. If you're into kind of like cutesy type worlds, that's cool. The controls are slightly interesting because it's like half climbing, and then the other half is like gliding. If you're from a high angle, you can just jump off of things and glide. Huh. The controls are sometimes cumbersome based on the terrain. Like, so sometimes it's kind of hard to like walk up a path if there's like a weird bend to it or something like that. And so there's some cases where you like fall off, but mostly it's nothing too, not too much friction there, though. I mean, after you get your climbing upgraded, it's definitely easier to traverse around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's like there's weird like flavors of like Celeste in the game, where they try and make like kind of like emotional storytelling, and like towards the top of the mountain, it gets, you know, like icy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it's a very short game, so there's, you know, none of this stuff is like... you know, deeply moving or anything like that. It's just a cute small game, I guess. I don't know if I would, I'm like, this was, it was a fine game. It's like, I don't know. I guess my metrics are all over the place. I guess it's like a B+ game or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I guess so. I'm a little bit confused by like why people are over the moon about it.
I looked for discourse about it. Kind of just people's first reactions to it, especially when it started getting a bunch of awards. I totally missed it. When it first came out. And I looked at like reviews and write-ups, and I couldn't see it. I am also in David's kind of camp, where that visual style, not necessarily the cutesiness, but specifically the pixelization filter that they run over mm-hmm. it actually mm-hmm. has been a problem for me in the past. First with an adventure game that I did like a night of for Hex Crank Live called A Room Beyond. And I think like maybe one or two things in the, that Haunted PS1 demo disc. Also, you used that filter, and yes, mm-hmm. headache inducing is it must just be like a personal thing why David and I have it, but you don't. Just like all of that kind of conspired to be like, yeah, this one might just not be for me.
Yeah, and as like an asterisk to the review, my review of it, like one cool thing is they give you like a lot of tools to interact with the world with. Like you can get, I think, shovels and pickaxes and sticks, and all of these things are like different things that you can use. Then it's very like open-ended in that sense. It's kind of like Zelda with that tool, where they give you like a lot of tools that are open-ended for how you can interact with the world.
Yeah.
And that's something that I haven't fully explored. So there could be like whole bunch of game there that I just am not interacting with because I just did Critical Path and I'm kind of done with it now.
But I mean, so, it also might just be, so, you know, a fun little walk.
Yeah.
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 So if I was going to be a, like, I don't know, contrarian, it seems, I don't know, the game seems kind of like whatever the video game award equivalent of like Oscar bait is. In terms of like, it sort of seems like maybe what you'd make if you wanted to make an indie darling game.
Low interaction, high charm.
Yeah, and just like the, like, let's, you know, very explicitly make it like low poly, retro, you know, kind of crappy graphics type of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do think there's...
Again, this is me being contrarian, not necessarily like, I'd say, a fair take on it.
No, I don't think that... I mean, I don't think that's completely unfair. Yeah, because I do think the comparison to Celeste is like, there's a little bit of like a nugget of truth there where it's like, Celeste I enjoyed. It's another game where I thought the praise that was on it was a lot more than what I kind of, the enjoyment I got out of the game.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's like a similar thing where the aesthetic's very, I guess, like cute and charming. And it could be like a similar pattern. There's something like this in board games. If you go to like Board Game Geek and stuff like that, where like, people are all in on games like that are like D&D related, or like Gloomhaven's like the number one game on Board Game Geek. Mm-hmm. And this was like, wasn't always the case. It used to be more like mechanic driven, like Twilight Struggle, I think, was like the number one game for a long time. And so like, there could be a similar thing in board game reviews as well, where people are more into the aesthetic part of it and maybe not the gameplay elements. And that's totally fine. But yeah, I might not be leaning too much into that as well.
Yeah.
So yeah. Anyway.
What's your third one?
Oh yeah, third game that I got is I'm back to playing Luigi's Mansion. I'm about two thirds through the game. This is a game I'm definitely warming up to. This game, I think the middle third that I've played in the last day or two is a lot better than the first third that I played. You can each of the floors is really cool because like each one's like a tangent into a different theme. Of something that's like in life that people are passionate about. Mm-hmm. It's a weird way to put it. Like there's like a plant floor, there's like a music floor, mm-hmm. there's like a filmmaking floor where it's like there's a director and he's making like a movie out of these like four different sets.
Mm-hmm.
And so like it's definitely like this one I think I can appreciate like the art more into it. Like it's just like a very beautifully realized environment. And there's like a bunch of like small little details that they kind of flesh out each of the floors with.
Mm-hmm.
In no way is it supposed to be beholden to reality. It's very similar to like a Mario game. It's like it's just busting with creativity.
It's
in
a
certain
goofy
places.
Cartoon.
Yeah. I will spoil one boss fight as to show an example of like how creative the game can be at sometimes. Is there's one floor that's called the Museum of Unnatural History. And you walk through and there's a boss fight that you have with a dinosaur very much in the similar vein as the setting in the last scene in Jurassic Park 1 that like dinosaurs rule the world. Yeah. Anyway, you like fight and kill this dinosaur. And after you do that, a ghost of a caveman that was eaten by the dinosaur comes out and then you have to fight him. And I'm like, wow, this is like some Dark Souls, like surprise boss fight.
Well, that's cool.
Boom. Surprise. Second phase.
Like yeah. And it's like, all right, I'm going to ignore like the science behind what's happening right now, but whatever.
Are you saying that the Luigi's Mansion and Mario by extension is creationists?
It sounds like it. You heard it here first on the level. Yeah. No, so it's like there's a lot of like cool creative moments like that. There are a few points of friction where there's like certain puzzles that might be a little bit annoying, but I think overall like I do enjoy that game. There's definitely a lot of moments that are like really, really cool and surprising. So so you get a lot of like similar feelings as like playing like Super Mario Odyssey, where it's just like a lot of, I don't know, fun, surprising interactions with the world. So
nice.
Yeah, so I'm pretty positive about that. I'll probably have that finished by next week,
mm-hmm.
and I need more games to play. So
I still can't get over that animation.
Which animation?
No, just the animation in Luigi's Mansion 3. I mean, all the Luigi's Mansion games, but Luigi's Mansion 3 specifically. Incredibly charming movement.
Yeah.
Yep. Cool. I don't have any other questions. Jala, David?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right.
David, how about you?
So I've just been continuing on with Fallout 76.
Okay.
So my goal right now, the game has the equivalent of the Boy Scouts that they call the Pioneer Scouts. And by either completing certain in-game challenges to get merit badges or completing daily quests, you can get what are called possum badges. Okay. And ultimately trade them in for upgrades to your backpack, which allows you to carry more stuff. Because honestly, inventory space is by far the number one challenge and concern in this game for me. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty much the two missions I'm running are gathering, cleaning up toxic mutagenic waste to, you know, help the environment, and collecting bug parts in order to make bug spray. And then there's also actually a kind of a cool mission that's basically, campfire ghost stories. But then halfway through, you have to, the tape you're that the robotic camp counselor is using ends, and you have to go find these clues around the camp to what happened. And depending on what clues you get, there's different kind of twist endings. So you can, for example, get the the little girl who mysteriously vanished, all of a sudden comes back as a feral ghoul and attacks you, or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So other than that, I'm just kind of running around the Appalachian countryside, which apparently the game has decided is pronounced Appalachia.
Yeah.
I've not heard that before.
Yeah, it's another pronunciation.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I do have to say I've gotten more experience with the actual NPCs they've added in. And I think they did a really good approach to it. They kind of have the core NPCs that kind of the pseudo end game, gameplay loop,
mm-hmm.
that, the most fleshed out. But then they also have kind of scattered about randomly various NPCs that just kind of have some, entertaining dialogue options. And so I think if they want to make the game really a success, they're going to need to keep building on this. But I think it's a good way to, for now, make the world feel a lot more alive. So, for example, one of the landmarks in the game is Vault Tech University, where all of the Vault Seers are went to college and were trained.
Oh, the Overseers?
Yeah, the Overseers. And you can basically find outside of there a basically high school history professor that somehow survived the apocalypse, and you can just have discussions with him about kind of reliving the glory days of when when the world cared about, the humanities and academia and stuff like that.
Prior to the Hobbesian survival nightmare that humanities, ushered itself into.
Yeah, exactly. and for that, I've maxed out intelligence. So that was kind of the
the version of that story that I was able to get. Presumably, if I had, you know, other stats, it potentially would have worked out differently. Because I know I got, you know, some loot out of him by basically, you know, befriending him and kind of, you know, sharing that. However, I know there's the option to simply, like, threaten him. Be like, give me all your stuff, nerd.
Yeah, that's probably what I would do.
Yeah,
probably,
you know,
probably not. I'd probably do what you do. But
yeah, so the one thing I think could be a little tough is I feel like they've kind of, you know, mixed their peas and carrots in that, you know, now they have a lot of dialogue options where it depends on your stats. But the problem is that their perk system wasn't really built around that.
Mm.
And so, for example, like, if you're unless you're going to be grouping all the time, charisma is straight up a dump stat. Like, it's largely worthless.
Oh, that's that would mess with me a lot. Charisma is usually what I put a lot of stuff into in these games.
Well, yeah, and that's the issue. Like, now, you know, in previous games, you know, the games were built around that. Now it's a thing where, you know, it provides, I think I have 3 points in charisma, which is what you need to get the Lone Wanderer perk.
Okay.
That basically, kind of compensates you, gives you a ton of damage reduction and stuff as long as you're not grouping with other people.
Yeah, yeah.
So I could see that being an issue. I don't know. It still gets back to, I think, a little bit some of the hubris of, like, hey, we can dumb down this experience and no one will notice.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, it does seem like they're very explicitly trying to make good on it. So, you know, hopefully that continues.
Hopefully. I mean, a lot like the campsite quest that you described sounds like a Fallout style thing. Like, you're describing things that are recognizably Fallout to me, you know, like the encounter with the nerd at the university feels like something that would have happened in the other games. So, like, they have not entirely lost the plot.
I have a theoretical degree in physics.
What's that from?
Fallout.
Gotcha.
there's definitely a lot of, a lot of things that are very likable like that. One, as much as I'll say the, you know, having just the NPCs was a major mistake, one of the kind of fun things about that is that very much makes the robots take center stage.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of fun seeing just the different takes on it. So, for example, one of the, you know, since this is a games as a service, as daily quests, and one of the daily quests is basically the shooting range robot. The Mr. Handy that runs the shooting range sends you out to get new targets to put up. But he very explicitly, knows that the world has ended and that there's absolutely no point in doing so. But his programming forces him to do that.
That's a nightmare.
And so it's like, yeah, that's both very Fallout-esque and kind of meta.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice. So, you know, it's pretty good. There's also, you can, so I am currently a general in the United States Army, technically, and you can technically become the president of the United States.
Why not?
You know.
Nice.
Yeah, good stuff.
I don't know that I have any questions about that. That just sounds fun. I've seen other people like posting details about it, and the idea of like a new actual Fallout game kind of is very tempting.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I definitely think,
especially one made not by Bethesda,
but it's been made by the, it's Bethesda. It is Bethesda.
Dang.
Yeah.
But they're definitely at least trying, and I feel like it's kind of like you lighten it up enough that all of the good things the game does then kind of have some room to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, it makes sense. Nice. So Fallout 76. Did you have anything else?
No, that's it.
All right. I'm going to be kind of a wet fart. I've like got half of a thing to say about three different things, but you know, so I finished up Onimusha Warlords. I streamed that, over the past three sessions that I did. Wasn't as horrible.
That boss fight.
Yeah. God, that fucking boss fight, man. Wow.
I think that's the angriest I've heard you yell before.
When it just screamed, God damn it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, skipping to the end of this, you know, so I streamed it and I got really, really angry because, you know, doing this very difficult final boss fight, like the game really wants you to go and do like a 20 floor challenge dungeon kind of thing to get the ultimate weapon to, you know, kill this really tough demon gang or whatever. And it was, you know, a fine enough fight to manage, you know, you just have to be careful. The exception being that at any time, if you are close enough to the boss, i.e. close enough to do damage, he can just do a swipe to grab you and chew on you like you're a Snickers bar.
Does he set you on fire as well?
I think so. Yeah. Just to be sure.
Yeah.
and it's instant death. No matter what. So I got really frustrated because I could, so, you know, so I could tell it was toward the end and he just ended the run, which is just a bummer. So I had to go back and do another couple of tries, but it was a lot. So I beat this game back when I was young. Like, you know, Onimusha is a game that, you know, like it was the first game that I got with my PlayStation 2. I was super excited because it was by the Resident Evil people and it was different. It wasn't like modern day America. It was in Japan. You were a samurai, et cetera, et cetera. Seemed cool. But back in the day it was all tank controls. So I have no idea how I did that fight with tank controls because it is a very, very action heavy game, more so than I remembered it being. This is the HD remaster, basically like the up-resed version of it. And I had fun. It just wasn't necessarily a great fit for Hex Crank Live. And people enjoyed it. We did get a couple of like,
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. we did get a few like drive-bys coming in, trying to backseat drive-bys. That's weird. Mix that metaphor a little bit. Sorry. Which is a bummer. People just coming in critiquing the way I play. It's like, but yeah, so good.
So what would be like the 1 minute, elevator pitch for what Onimusha is?
Onimusha is what if Resident Evil was way more action based and took place primarily in a haunted demon infested mansion full of traps.
Pretty sure that was Resident Evil 6, but all right.
I mean, the demons in the Japan in the, yeah, it, I mean, eventually later on, like weirdly, like Onimusha feels like an extension. It feels like it's very obvious that it came from the same studio that did Resident Evil and thought, hey, we can do Dino Crisis as well. And then do Dino Crisis 2, okay. You know, like it feels mm-hmm. like an extension on down that line. And after Warlords, after the original, they would, you know, make the series far more action emphasis and really downplay the survival horror elements of it.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a little bit of a bummer that it wasn't that great of a fit, but I enjoyed myself. I've not played any of the other Onimusha games. I know Onimusha 3 has a reputation for being good. And then like, I think 4 was like an Xbox exclusives. Yeah, just weird PlayStation 2 and Xbox era stuff. Do you guys have any questions about kind of what that game is like because really, I feel like I've said my piece on it.
I mean, it looks like a game from the 90s.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like a game I would want to play now, but I'm very biased with those types of things.
Yeah. The HD remaster does, you know, add regular action game controls and stuff. And also they make it easy to switch weapons and stuff like that. But yeah, it is a very dated kind of game, and it's a very dated experience. Hell of a difficulty curve, although part of that's on me. I didn't realize that I got a better set of armor. So I didn't equip it until I found a set of better armor. So I was behind the curve for about a third of the game. Oops. Oh, well, nobody corrected me. Yeah.
Nobody backseat drove by that.
The people I know, the regulars know, they can correct me. It's just when it's somebody I don't know from Adam who comes in, who is obviously searching for the name of the game and is looking to seem cool because they know that the wind weapon is underpowered. I'm angry. The other thing that I dipped into, so like that's the thing that I played the most. I played a little bit more of Final Fantasy VII Remake, but I've not gotten much further than where the demo is. You know, all I can say about that is, you know, kind of an echo of what I said in the original when I talked about the demo, which is, man, I am not made of stone. Nostalgia works on me. And specifically, the music is just tremendous. You know, it's cheap, whatever. They can get in there and mess around with my feel good chemicals by just putting up a couple of familiar notes, but we're there. It's fine. The action continues to be really fun. I like the battle system. Who knows if that will change as more demands get placed on me, but yeah, it is a pretty game. And so far I've been a-okay with the choices they've made in terms of changing things up.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have more to say about that when I've played more of it, but
I'll be more excited when I can actually play it. Yeah. But sorry, since I can't, I don't.
No, it's
like I got nothing.
Yeah, I think it's PS4 exclusive for like a year, and then it's gonna come out on other stuff. So yeah, nothing I can do about that.
It's fine. Like I'm. Yeah, I'm not like one of the people who's just like was super chomping at the bit, going nuts, waiting for it or right. anything. Like I'm fine. I have plenty of games mm-hmm. to play.
Yeah, this is totally
even all. If I bought it would probably sit in. No, it probably would not sit in backlog for a year, but it could potentially.
Yeah, yeah.
Sit in backlog.
That's also a big game, you know. And you just got off of a lot of JRPGs too. So.
Oh, and I still have Final Fantasy XII to finish. Yeah. Like sometime maybe if I ever get to grinding.
And then the other thing that I played a little bit more of is Half-Life Alyx, but really all that I have to say is, yeah, continues to be a good game. Like the puzzles in it are good and weird and fun. And I didn't kind of expect them to be that. I didn't expect them to lean on that really. I thought it'd be more combat heavy, but there's like fun little environmental observation puzzles, that you have to do.
Sweet.
And even like hacking different combine devices with your little Omni tool. Like it's really difficult to describe what you have to do, but just like the movements that they walk you through, like connecting these different nodes and like rotating hypothetical shapes in space in front of you in order to make machinery work the way you need it to, is really good and immersive. The writing continues to be really funny.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Yeah. You know, like at one point, so you've got a voice in your ear. There's a guy, his name is Russell. He's one of the Black Mesa scientist buddies. I forget what he said. He was like, "Oh, I interviewed to work at Black Mesa, but they said I would be better used elsewhere." Like it was just a real, it was like they really obviously like brushed him off. But he, you know, he's talking about like, "Oh, you found this fabricator. You found a place where you can use a combine fabricator to modify items. Why don't you try your gun? You know, it's a pistol that he gave you." There's a back and forth about how he gave you a bad pistol just in case, you know, if you didn't make it, he wouldn't mind having lost it. And so you go in and you use these items that you've been picking up to do modifications on your gun. And when you pull it out, it says, "Oh, it worked. Huh?" Which implies that he had no idea it would work and he was fine stranding you alone. So there's like a little bit of like a Wheatley kind of vibe to it, but I'm down for it.
nice.
Yeah. Cool. No, that's good. Half-Life Alyx is very fun. Although now that I am in a place where I am fighting zombies and head crabs, I am also in a place where I am constantly running low on ammo. And man, you know, last time when I described the reload procedure, where you have to like press the slide release to drop the magazine, you have to reach over your shoulder to grab a magazine, you have to pop it into the bottom, and then you have to pull the slide again to chamber around. Doing that when a zombie is bearing down on you is fucking harrowing.
Have you thrown your headset off yet?
No. It's been. You just panic and run, you know. You just dash across the space, or you know. But it's it's something else.
Have you startled Greta yet?
No, she's fine. She, you know, generally just kind of sleeps in the room when I'm doing VR. Sometimes I will feel her brushing up against my ankles, but she does that anyway. Like whether I'm sitting there, when I'm sleeping, when I'm doing dishes or walking. She just generally wants to rub up on my ankles. So she knows to stay out of the way. She's fine. She does not get startled. Onimusha Warlords, Final Fantasy VII Remake, and Half-Life Alyx. Any questions about Half-Life Alyx?
No.
Okay.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Jella, what's the question that you asked the nice people?
I asked them to describe the last game that they played in terms of a restaurant. What kind of food is in there? What is the quality of the food? What kind of ambiance? How much does it cost? Etc.
Mm-hmm.
The food relation, you can kind of tell from my grind why I'm asking about that.
Yeah, and also the image that you posted was Kirby inhaling all of his friends. Yes. Let's see here. So I'm gonna put in here for Casey, who says, I had a coupon for a free meal. It was epic to get it like that. South American food, the menus were too big and too complicated, and my meal tasted a lot like the last time I went there. Ambience was very jungles and explosions, lots of neon colored paints, and half of the stuff. Everything else was in black and red. Overall, a solid 6 out of 10 meal. I really grappled with my score on this one. And Casey clarifies they're talking about Just Cause 4, which was free on the Epic Store a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be the Far Cry game.
Yeah,
post-apocalyptic.
I was thinking, yeah, Far Cry also initially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then the South American and then the grapple really brought that one forward to me. Yeah. Let's see, Ben, what does Greg say?
Greg says, last game I played was Final Fantasy VII Remake, my current game product. Seventh Heaven is a bar you'd like to hang out in, even if in the middle of the slums, you have food and booze, typical bar games, a jukebox, and an attractive bartender who knows her stuff. Too bad we can't have this in real life. Square Enix would sue their living their ass faster than I could order a Cosmo Canyon.
Okay, ordering a Cosmo Canyon as a cocktail is very good. I'm surprised I have not seen that at any of the nerd bars that we've held events at.
Right?
Yeah. David, what does Austin say?
Austin says, it's set on a beautiful flying ship. Most of the items are various forms of cooked mushrooms and turtles. All of the waiters have overalls and foxtails, and it all just costs 1 coin.
I assume Mario Maker? Oh, Super Mario Brothers 3. Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. Very good.
Jello, what does Ruki say?
Ruki says, I wanted some Mexican food, and there is an authentic place nearby that was a revelation the first time I went. But I had just eaten there recently, and I didn't want to eat there again so soon, so I went to Taco Bell instead. It's ostensibly Mexican food, and it scratches that itch, but it can't compare to the actual restaurant I love so much. But I need to let some time pass before I go back to the authentic place, so it can be a fresh experience again. And he says that I'm playing The Surge 2 because my last replay of Dark Souls was only a couple of months ago, but I'm having that Soulsborne itch again.
Hmm. Yes. So
is The Surge 2 actually set in Mexico, or are we just using Mexican food as kind of a metaphor.
Yeah, I think Rookie's using the metaphor. I think Rookie might just like Mexican food, and also like there is the you know there is the you know great quality span of like a good authentic Mexican place and like a real you know fast food kind of place.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Christopher says, imagine Russian food invading Afghani cuisine. You can only enjoy it at military outposts in Afghanistan. And if you don't like it, you might be blasted away into the middle of the ocean somewhere and brainwashed into liking it.
There's no suggestion of what it is.
No, it's Metal Gear Solid 5.
Yeah.
I imagine it's Metal Gear Solid 5. Also, I've seen their Facebook updates. They were playing Ground Zeroes here recently. So,
oh, were they?
Yeah. So I also
there it is. Yeah.
Are you sure that Kojima knows how grammar works?
Death Stranding, Ground Zeroes.
Yeah.
I think that he likes wordplay.
I think he knows it better than the average American.
Let's see here. This will be you, Ben. What does Lindsay say?
Lindsay says, Chez Clappy is a fancy buffet that specializes in knuckle sandwiches, extra crispy meats, and over-the-top desserts. They also get all their food fresh from all the farms they have. Borderlands 3 is all I really play right now. If you haven't played the Guns, Loves, and Tentacles DLC, Dennis, you really should. It is a great aside from the main story and an amazing love letter to H.P. Lovecraft.
Weird.
Also funny that he directed a message to the one person not on the podcast right now.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Deliver the message.
David, what does Stuart say?
Stuart says, massive meal divided into 140 servings. A bite or two each. As you eat, you find you prefer some meal paths over others, and know you're going to have to let some slide. There's a chill band with a fantastic female vocalist playing nearby. The whole restaurant is decorated art depicting food in a Russian constructivist style. And the game is Persona 5 Royal.
Oh, yeah. No, cool. I can see that. Although the game divided into 140 servings immediately made me think of Twitter for some reason. But yeah. I guess Persona 5 takes place over 140 days.
Yeah.
Nice. Jala, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, I forgot about food. I forgot about my family and taking care of my health. I just needed one more hit of that sweet, sweet crack. It was the only way to feel alive. Screw it. The only way I could feel normal. Feel at all. I've been playing Tetris again.
Yep.
Yeah.
I felt the Tetris hunger in me. It's been about a year since we did that special episode on WoW, and I haven't played Tetris in a while. I would like to play Tetris.
I've been playing Puzzle Juice.
I shouldn't play Tetris.
It's Tetris plus color matching plus word finding.
That sounds way too complicated.
Oh, there's so much stuff going on. I love it. Dennis tried it and he was like dying. He's like, how did you play this? And I'm like sitting here meanwhile with like millions, my score's in the millions. I'm just like, I have to turn off the game, you know, because like I'm not going to die.
Yeah. No, I like Tetris because I don't think. I'm serious.
I know. Yeah.
Let's see. John says, the room was well lit. The decor was very comforting and seemed familiar. The music created a sense of ambience that took me back to my youth. I ordered the New York strip, but they upgraded me to a filet mignon. My only problem was the portions. The steak was fine, but there was too much mashed potatoes and vegetables overflowing my plate. The cost matched the product, but the wait for dessert is far too long. Referring to the Final Fantasy VII remake. So I guess there's some filler.
Very good.
You know, a full-length game that takes place only in Midgar.
Well, they stretch out the first 5 hours of the game into what, about 30, right? I mean, like, that's
something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a lot.
Mm-hmm. And I can feel that wait for dessert. Yeah. And Ben, why don't you round us out with what Marisan says?
Marisan says, I've always heard about this diner. It made big waves when it opened a few years ago, and to top it off, it was right around the corner from where I live. I shrugged it off as the new thing in town and didn't get around to it until a few days ago. Plus, it had super cringe name. The setting was weird at first, but it has a sort of charm to it that I can't quite get enough of. There is even there's so much variety in the menu that it's simply divine. There's something for everyone. I highly recommend Hollow Knight Diner to anyone on the PC, console, toaster area. 5 out of 5 would nail.
Marisan isn't being gross. You play as a bug, and your weapon is a nail that you carry.
Yeah,
you swing around. Yeah. I just wanted to put that there. Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, using a nail and squishing things with it is pretty gross too, but you know, different way.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's all of the listener responses we have here. Mine is super easy. The most recent game that I have beaten is Hypnospace Outlaw. Played that for Watch Out for Fireballs. It's amazing, by the way. I love it. And it's a little bit like rounding a corner, you know, in a building that, you know, maybe you've been in before. And finding a vending machine that is full of nothing but, you know, discontinued foods from your childhood, but all of it is very well preserved. So, you know, things like Surge Cola or Fun Dip, basically anything you would get at like a, you know, like a school concession stand, I think, you know, or sub in anything that you would have been eating in 1999. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. How about you, Ben?
Yeah, so mine is, I ordered a pizza. It came in a disgusting rusted box that was covered with black stuff, but the delivery guy was really nice. His name was Norman Reedus, and I gave him a like on Instagram.
Very good.
David, how about you?
Sure. So, I think mine, you know, went out to, old retro, googly style, diner. You know, you can have whatever you want to drink as long as it's cola, and you know, all of the food is you know, fine as long as you're fine with lots and lots of preservatives.
Yep,
so, and of course Fallout 76,
of course.
Mm-hmm.
Angela, how about you?
Kirby is, of course, an international super buffet. Everything is really great. There's tons of people that go there. It's really well lit, super colorful. There's games for kids of all ages at every booth and table, and they're all unique. And it costs your standard meal plus ambiance price.
Mm-hmm.
It's a place that you go to every once in a while, but boy, is it good when you do.
Just don't look in the kitchen to see what the food's made out of.
Yeah, it might be made of your buddies.
Shh.
Don't.
Secret ingredient.
Yeah. It's a trade secret. We will ruin you. Very good, creative question. Thank you for putting that up, Jala.
Yeah.
If you would like to participate in these going forward, you can go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us, things that are exciting. Jala, what is Hollywood doing with those video games?
Well, due to production delays related to COVID, Hollywood studios are using virtual reality tools from Epic Games and Unity Technologies to create computer-generated virtual sets for upcoming films and series from studios like, you will know, Disney and Netflix, because Irishman and Mandalorian both were done in this style.
Mm-hmm.
But other studios are also starting to do this, including Warner Brothers, Paramount, Hulu, CBS's TV studio, and so on. Basically, because, you know, right now travel is super expensive and super risky and, you know, crazy costly. I mean, like, at this point, they can just, you know, do a use the same amount of cost, but do it in a more safer environment, you know, by doing it this way. Basically, the actors are shot inside studios with walls and ceilings that are giant 4K resolution LED video screens, mm-hmm. depicting the virtual set. and they do this instead of green screening, because then they don't have to do everything in post.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Nice.
So, yeah. Like, that's a thing that's happening, is that from now on, you might be seeing quite a few movies, or at least for a little bit, with the virtual set in the background.
Yeah. I hope that's not a forever thing, because I do not like to think of what would happen if it's just like, yeah, well, we don't need to hire, like, set designers anymore.
Yeah.
You know? Or maybe that's just me being a Luddite. I've got no idea. It just seems, you know. See, it seems like there are trade-offs, but at the very least, you know,
yeah,
there's not going to be as much of a dry spell, you know, down the line if they're trying to use that. Although a dry spell is worth, you know, saving lives. So that's good.
I think many people would disagree with you.
They're wrong. Human life is more valuable than any movie. I hate to be controversial here. Speaking of a dry spell and delays and working around things, something notable that we talked about a while back is that The Last of Us 2 was delayed. Originally, it was supposed to come out on May the 25th. Sorry. But it was pushed back to an indefinite time period. However, now it has a release date. It'll be coming out on June the 19th, so not that much of a delay at all. Additionally, the other Sony Interactive Entertainment game made by the Horizon Zero Dawn people, Ghost of Tsushima, that is going to be coming out on July the 17th. So that is getting a minor pushback as well. So those games have dates, and it's not going to be as as devastating of a delay as it otherwise would be. Although I think that both of those games were close enough to gold that the COVID epidemic maybe didn't necessarily mess with things as much as they could. I think that like next Q1 of 2021 is going to be real dry, you guys. At least when it comes to AAA titles. That is my forecast on this. There's another story that some people leaked basically an entire plot synopsis for The Last of Us Part 2, which is a real bummer. Spoiled it for everybody. So if you are somebody who is invested in taking that ride when The Last of Us Part 2 comes out, understand that right now the internet is full of people talking about late game story details.
Don't click on those YouTube links.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I put up a couple of mutes on Twitter just in case, not because I'm like super invested and being taken by surprise, but if I can help it, I would like to help it.
Yeah.
Yep. Let's see here. So that's my story. David, what is happening with XCOM?
Yeah. So, XCOM has, released, I guess XCOM, you know, the company that makes XCOM.
Firaxis has.
Yes. Impronounceable name has released a new XCOM game called XCOM Chimera Squad.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't gotten a chance to try it yet, but it looks pretty cool. Apparently takes place in a future after XCOM 2, where humans and aliens have decided to share the Earth.
Mm-hmm. Takes place in the bad timeline. Yeah.
Well, and so that's actually the question of this story is, you know, what is the timeline? Mm-hmm. So what reporter called up the lead developer of these games and asked them, you know, basically what is officially canon. And apparently the answer is that the XCOM third person shooter is not canon. XCOM Enemy Unknown is canon. However, Enemy Within is not.
Okay.
And for XCOM 2, specifically War of the Chosen is canon. And then XCOM Chimera Squad is canon.
Okay.
Like, I guess I don't care what's canon or not, but it's weird that like every other one is like truthful or an aside.
So yeah. I think part of it is that the was it Enemy Within, I guess I actually haven't played it, but according to this article, like, kind of explicitly requires that humanity wins the war in order to make sense. And so that's the main reason why it's not canon.
And not like okay. The weird gene fusing stuff?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
No, because I believe gene fusing is explicitly a fairly major plot point of Chimera Squad, because you know, if there's one thing humanity's going to do when exposed to aliens, it's start breeding with them. Like, that's basically...
I mean, it's more about harvesting a substance called meld and then examining the physiology and figuring out a way to adapt their abilities to our own. But never mind.
I like David's explanation better, so I'm going to choose to believe that.
Someone fucked a sectoid. It's fine.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's good that we know that, although to me it's kind of like, you know, I never take the story seriously, and by never I mean recently when I played Enemy Within and Enemy Unknown, at least so far I don't necessarily have an awful lot of investment in the canon status of any given thing. It's a little Zelda timeliney for me, but it's good that there's an official word on that for people who do care.
Yeah, I'm a little disappointed that XCOM 2 is the original XCOM 2 is not canon, so you know Cthulhu does not exist in this timeline.
Oh, right. There is no terror from the deep. Yeah. Nice. I picked up Chimera Squad when it was on the $10 launch discount. It looks really fun. I want to play that. So
yeah, it sounds fun. I'm kind of excited for a more like character driven XCOM game. That mm-hmm. sounds kind of cool.
Yeah. Ben, you got a story?
I do. I didn't post anything, but it's not even game related. But there's a new show on Netflix called The Midnight Gospel that's made by the same guy who made Adventure Time, and I've seen two of the first three episodes. I've seen the first three episodes, and two of the three are great. So hearty recommendation.
So what's the 1 minute elevator pitch?
There's a character who exists in the multiverse who goes to different versions of Earth before they're destroyed. And the dialogue of the show is mostly just a conversation between two people talking about like philosophy, but then there's just a bunch of crazy shit happening as they're doing this that they're just like kind of paying attention to as they're walking through it. It's really good. If you like Adventure Time, it's great. It's just like a TVMA version of Adventure Time.
This is done by Penn Ward?
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Is it a cartoon or is it live action?
Yeah.
Okay.
Cartoon, and the animation's great.
Nice. I had no idea. I saw people talking about Midnight Gospel, but his name didn't come up. I didn't see the Adventure Time connection.
Yep. I think it's 8 episodes, maybe. So I will probably binge the rest of it in the next few days.
Nice. Very cool. How do you all feel about bundling it up?
I feel buttoned.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this episode of The Level number 273. If you're listening, I mean, I feel bad always saying you know what to do, but I mean, things that do genuinely help us out, ratings or reviews on Apple Podcasts, or like sharing us with your friends, anything to help raise the listener base. Sticking around and participating in the multiplayer is always good. That is on the Facebook page, facebook.com/TheLevelPodcast. You can interact with our fun community by backing us on Slack or backing us on Patreon and joining the Slack channel where people talk about things related to topics on the show and even just, you know, bum around, talk about things I've been playing. All of that is good. And then the usual like life stuff, like washing your hands, taking care of each other, staying safe, staying sane, all of that. Is there anything that I'm forgetting?
No, you got it with the second part.
Okay. Cool. So I've been Cole Ross. You can see my tweets on Twitter @ Cole Ross, KOLERoss.
I'm David Meismith. You can see me on the level.
I'm Jala Chan in places.
I'm Ben Merkel, and you can hear me on the level.
Hmm. Distinct. And stick around for some titles. Okay, who has titles?
I have a couple.
Okay.
Voror game.
Ooh, I didn't intentionally pronounce that Voror. Voror game.
You didn't?
No, I said Vor game.
Oh.
Yeah, maybe I'm
out of it. Get that Vor.
Okay.
Okay, and then backseat drive by.
Okay. All right. Let's see who else has one. Ben?
I did not collect titles this week.
Okay, David?
Nor did I, but
Ooh,
I support
boy.
The four.
What about you, Cole?
Did you?
George Glass? No, I didn't. No.
Oh, Lord.
It's yeah. like backseat drive-by sneaks in.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We knew that was... It's funny because like as soon as I wrote it down, I was like, that's going to be the title.
Oh.
What did I know? The only reason it's a title is because I wrote it down.
I'm sorry about that. I was listening. I just didn't hear anything that I didn't...
This is how Trump gets elected.
Damn it. Oh. You're bumming me out.
That's no. late title right there.
No, I don't want to bum.
No, I know.
Yeah,
I don't want that.
I know.
Oh. It's just a boy.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm fine with backseat drive-by.
Yeah. Backseat drive-by is good. Cool.
Okay, I'm going to go eat too.
All right. Bye. Have a good night, everybody. Bye.
Have a good week. Yeah. Get safe. See you guys.
Bye.
Before I eat all of you. Okay. Okay,
see back to that four.
Bye.